Now, the ethics of crowdfunding to cover the costs of legal fees. 18-year-old Kyle Rittenhouse is facing homicide charges for fatally shooting two Black Lives Matter demonstrators in Kenosha last August. His family turned to crowdfunding and at one point selling free Kyle merchandise before it was banned on Shopify, raising hundreds of thousands of dollars through online donations. What questions do you have about legal crowdfunding? Have you donated to any legal defenses in high-profile cases in the past? Conversation is right here, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Mark Palmer is chief counsel of the Illinois Supreme Court Commission on Professionalism. Mark, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. Well, straight out of the gate here, is it ethical for a lawyer to represent a client who has used crowdfunding to solicit and accept donations to fund the lawyer fees?
Well, this is, of course, somewhat of a novel question. And like many novel questions and many legal questions, the answer is always it depends. but in general, yes, you can use crowdsourcing to fund legal services expenses.
Okay, so well, let's break that down and get into that thorny issue. What must attorneys consider when they represent clients who have accepted these types of funds?
Yeah, it really is important on the attorney to examine, first of all, do they even know where the funds came from? Put yourself in the shoes of an attorney, and in walks the client with a big briefcase, you know, the classic cartoon style of the bill sticking out the sides, it's stuffed full, and they need a lawyer. Do you know where that money came from? Did it come from a bank and they got a loan? Or did they literally just go rob that bank? And does it matter to you? You may not have any knowledge. But if you do know, if you were part of that experience, then you understand that you have to have an obligation to the person that walked in your door, not the person who funded them. And that's really part of the key element. But in crowdsourcing, we've seen even not only is the client going out and soliciting those funds, which they have the right to do, but sometimes the law firms or the lawyer is involved directly in that ask. And that's where it can really get muddy for the lawyer. They have to be very careful because they follow not just the law and other rules. They have their ethical rules, depending on which state they live in, which jurisdiction they practice in. Whether it be in Wisconsin or Illinois, where I'm sitting, most of them follow a model rule a structure that's based on the American Bar Association structure. And built right into that is that a lawyer can't make fraudulent, false, or misleading statements. And that would be inclusive of soliciting for such funds and not making any false promises along that process, of course.
Well, Mark, along those lines, last year, a lawyer defending Kyle Rittenhouse resigned from his position with a defense fund, and some of the money raised was expected to go toward Rittenhouse's defense. How might an attorney's relationship to crowdfunding sources affect how that attorney is perceived?
Well, there's three key elements that must be maintained, I'll say, when you have the outside source, whether it's crowdfunding or whether it's another source. There's a whole cottage industry based on alternative litigation finance, and it can be a beneficial thing. It can address access to justice issues, of course, but the key component there is that they cannot be the puppet master for the client. The client must still steer the relationship. And in that respect, it must not just give consent to what's happening. It must give informed consent. So is the client actually involved in the crowdsourcing to begin with, whether the attorney is or not? And secondly, there cannot be any interference with the lawyer's independent judgment right there. And that goes along with the client-attorney relationship that's so valuable and so preserved. And third, most all cases involve some level of confidential information, usually about the facts of the case, right? Mm-hmm. And that must remain confidential as well. You're not going to, get a secret newsletter because you donated $10 about some details about the case. It doesn't work that way. That confidential information must remain so the legal process can move forward justly.
I want to talk about the acronym IOLTA, which stands for Interest on Lawyer Trust Account. Lawyers are required to create this separate trust account to hold their clients' money, which can be used to cover the cost of legal services. So you're not, like, you know, mixing client money with lawyer money. Mm-hmm. And apparently you can set up your online fundraising account to feed directly to the IOLTA. Can you explain this?
Yeah, that's another interesting element that you have to be aware of. Again, kind of going back to my walking in the door with the briefcase example, how is the lawyer being paid? You need to ask that question. Is the crowdfunding source directly funneling to the lawyer or the law firm, or is it going to the client and then the client is therefore paying the lawyer? Mm-hmm. And those are two very distinct paths to follow. In the instance you just described, it's the latter. It's going directly into a source fund. Think of it as a pool, but as kind of an escrow account. And that lawyer doesn't earn those fees until they have acted upon them. They've either represented them, billed towards that fund, or had legal expenses otherwise that are always having to be reasonable. Again, going back to the rules, as lawyers are always trained, you look first to the rules. The ethical rules require the lawyer's fees to be reasonable. And you say, okay, Mark, what does reasonable mean? Well, there's an enumerated list of how you analyze the reasonableness of a client's fee, but it can involve the outcome. It can involve typical situations comparable to other types of cases and the like. But in the end of the day, the lawyer cannot enjoy just a massive windfall of hundreds of thousands of dollars when a case may be settled very quickly, for example. You can't operate in that respect. And that's why you have to have a segregated account that controls that. And then the question turns on, well, if there is surplus at the end, where is that going?
Where does it go?
Who controls it, right? Yeah. And those are many times unanswered questions, especially for the donor. So you have to be very careful about that.
Mark Palmer, Chief Counsel of the Illinois Supreme Court Commission on Professionalism, as we look at the ethics of crowdfunding legal fees, how do you feel about crowdfunding in high-profile cases like Kyle Rittenhouse's or Derek Chauvin? Are you concerned about officers or public officials donating to a specific legal defense fund? 800-642-1234. We can continue this conversation ahead on the Ideas Network. Now we're getting a primer on crowdfunding for legal fees and the ethics of legal defense funds. Crowdfunding campaigns are growing more visible, more lucrative. According to one crowdfunding site, Fundly, $34 billion is raised worldwide annually through this type of fundraising. Are you an attorney, a judge, or work in the legal profession? How do you feel about clients receiving solicited donations from the public? 800-642-1234. Conversation is right here. Mark Palmer is chief counsel serving under the Illinois Supreme Court Commission on Professionalism, and he stays with us. Let's bring in Jim now in Beaver Dam. Hi, Jim. What are your thoughts?
Hello. My thought is that if the DA feels that you are guilty and you are indigent or just a paycheck to paycheck worker, this kind of funding is necessary. The system is rigged against the other person, and you really need either your own money or help from others. And so to keep the system fair, I think that this should be allowed, period.
Jim, thank you. Mark, you know, Jim is saying, look, the justice system, it's not a level playing field, and this is vitally important.
Sure. A couple things come to mind when I listen to what Jim's words there is, one, of course, in the criminal system, we have to remember there's many instances that our U.S. Supreme Court has made firmly clear that you have a right to an attorney appointed for you in criminal cases, when usually in general terms, when jail is a possibility and more than a year. But in the public sector, when you are trying to enforce your rights and stand up for some type of maybe monetary relief or other relief that these instances are raising money for, there's always that catch-22. You're not given an attorney by the state, by the court itself. You can go hire your own or maybe find one that will represent for you free of charge, a pro bono attorney. But think about the difficulty, the catch-22, as I mentioned, between somebody who's financing you. Let's say someone comes to you and wants a loan saying, hey, give me $10,000 as an investment in this lawsuit, and when I win, you'll get your money back plus maybe $2,000 because I have a great case. But how do you analyze that case? You have to know the confidential information to a degree, at least, to analyze if that has any potential whatsoever, be it an accident or otherwise. So there's always that kind of dichotomy of privilege working behind the scenes. And that's a difficult ethical question for lawyers and for clients, people out there with legal problems that need solutions, but may not have a treasure trove of money sitting behind them that they can pay to find the best representation or any representation.
Circling back to these online platforms, you know, some Capitol Hill rioters had tried to use online fundraising to raise money to cover legal fees, and accounts were shut down. What are your thoughts on when and how tech companies should step in into these ethical decisions and what financial options the person accused of a crime should have?
Yeah, I think a lot of them are just, and maybe rightfully so, afraid to get into those waters to begin with. It can be easy when you're seeing someone maybe to raise a few, $1,000 to help with a surgery for an animal or something like that. I see those a lot online and so forth. But when you're getting into this whole realm that's covered by ethical rules and an entire profession that must abide by those rules, these are not should follow rules, these are must follow rules. That's when you have crossover with these third party, establishments that are typically crowdfunding of all types. It can't be that type of Kickstarter relationship where you contribute a certain amount and you get a return.
Mark, we're out of time. Thank you for joining us. Mark Palmer, the Chief Counsel of the Illinois Supreme Court Commission on Professionalism.